This is The Women of Letters, a podcast dedicated to the TV show Supernatural and everything fandom. And welcome to the Women of Letters podcast. I'm Jules from the Super Wiki, and I'm here with Amy.
Yep, I'm Amy, also known around the traps as Sweet Ondine. And Jules and I are going to be talking about the big mid-season finale today.
Yes, episode 9, season 10, The Things We Left Behind. I'm almost shocked that we've got to the... You know, nearly midway through the season already, Amy. How quickly has this gone?
I know, it's really... It only seems a minute ago that we were super excited about the season coming back and what was going to be happening. In fact, it doesn't actually seem that long ago since the catastrophic end of season 9 and my mourning for like 3 months.
Yes.
You know, so to find that we're actually here and knowing that they're prepping at the moment 10:15 and about to shoot 10:14, I mean, it's like, oh my gosh, it seems to make the year go even quicker when you're sort of, you know, watching it tick away with a TV show. But I can't believe we're at this point in the season already.
It's gone so quickly. And so amazingly, I think we're both on the page of this has been one of the strongest, you know, first halves of a season that we've both utterly, utterly enjoyed. And that, as Jeremy Carver promised, things have got personal and it's been a very character-focused season so far.
Yeah, I think anybody who listens to our podcast every week knows that we're both loving it, and I love the character, how this has been a very character-rich season, because, you know, really, in amongst all the monsters, which are awesome fun, what this show really does best is write beautiful characters, and it's when it's focused on the stories of the characters we love when this show really soars, and I think that's what it's been doing this season, because it has been so intimate in the storytelling of these people that we love. It's just, for me, it's just been so compelling week in, week out. And like we keep saying, it's been compelling even though there hasn't been this major, or probably because of the fact that there isn't this major life or death, you know, thing hanging over, well, there kind of is, but, you know, like a big creature hanging over their head the whole time that they're having to fight. And so we actually have time to, you know, really listen to and enjoy these stories that are being told about these people that we just adore. And it's been a beautiful ride.
And certainly, you know, certainly harking back, I think, to season 1, maybe 2, but yes, where there wasn't, you know, there was a myth arc, but it wasn't the end of the world in the first front of the season. It was the boys getting to know each other after an estrangement, and exactly what we've got here in season, the first half of season 10 is the same thing, and the boys getting to know each other after what was a very tough time in the previous year, or 2 years, or 10 years. You know, and you and I have often said that, you know, the frustrating thing for the boys and for us is often they get to a point where they're sort of moving forward in their personal growth and their relationship, but it never gets room to breathe because, you know, the world's about to end. And this, it has been a time where, you know, they've really been searching, having to search for hunts to do, and, you know, they haven't had the, you know, Lucifer, Leviathans, Metatron sort of breathing down their neck, and that's been wonderful. And I mean, we've got to, and also with Cass, who's had similarly had a bit of a mission, but really there's been a chance to explore and you know, give the characters some more room to look at their, you know, where they're going and who they are. And in the middle, we had the wonderful 200th episode, which kills me.
I know. It does still kill me too. It's just awesome. I love it. I actually watched it the other day and I hadn't watched it for a while. And I was just like, oh, this episode just gives me all the warm fuzzies. Lots of warm fuzzy feels.
Yes, and there was lovely on their Facebook page the other day, Kansas actually tweeted a link to the version of Carry On that was in the episode, and they hashtagged it Single Man Tear.
Bless
That's
them.
Amazing.
They must just love that. That they've been, you know, like that Carry On is such a big part of our show. They must just love it. But yeah, so and then here we are with like a nasty little, what is it, a 6 weeks, it's like 39 days or something now.
It's not as bad as some. I actually on Tumblr I did a where every what had happened in every season, a mid-season finale, because, you know, various people were going, oh, it's always a cliffhanger or it's always this. And, you know, there's been a variety of things happen over the years. Sometimes a cliffhanger, sometimes it's more a revelation of something, or not always. If you remember, season three was the Christmas episode, which, of course, Dean was still about to die, but you know that ended on a very different note. So but looking at some of the dates between you know, I think particularly early on there was might have been the first season sort of ended at the end of November and didn't come back till late January, and I was like, okay, I'm not gonna complain.
No, I think it's not too bad. I mean, it's 38 days today because I have a little countdown going, but I don't think that's too bad. You know, essentially it's what, well, 6 weeks, I guess, but well, it's not too bad.
As you and I were saying, it's sort of essential as well, because what the CW have done over the last few years is had less in-season breaks. So, for example, in this front half, we had 1 week off before the 200th, which was mainly to align it with Sweeps Week, and we had the retrospective that week anyway. We didn't even have a break for in the Thanksgiving.
Which is unusual.
And then when we come back, there'll be 1 or 2 weeks off. But basically they have to do that. I mean, the season has to end up in May during Sweeps Week, which is the big ratings week. But the problem they start to get now is that as opposed to the beginning when they're filming episodes that are going to be broadcast in 3 months' time, they're now filming episodes that are going to be broadcast in not many weeks' time. And they need time to make the show. So yeah. One of the reasons, people, that we have these breaks coming up in the second half of the season is literally so that they can finish episodes for broadcast. It's not any other reason. It's not done to torture you.
Just to torture you. That's why they do it.
That's just to torture you. But two things. They need to line the end of the season up with Sweeps Week in May, and they have to have a little bit of time to actually make the episodes. So although they won't be shooting, they finish shooting, I think, next week, and most of the cast and crew have a couple of weeks off, I can tell you post-production, VFX will still be
turning.
Well, not, I think they're allowed a day or two off, but you know, that's the post-production work starts to really, you know, schedule heats up now, and you know, they're really starting to be finishing things a lot closer to broadcast date, and I know a lot of you don't care about this, but it's good to understand why why these things happen. And we are lucky in that we don't get, you know, as opposed to some shows these days that have like 3 months off in the middle.
Oh my God, I know, right?
So at least we get a pretty much a straight run through. And I always like, look, as far as I'm concerned, the longer they stretch out the season, the shorter that hiatus between seasons is.
And it is actually super nice, even if we end up with a slightly longer break here. Not that we are doing that, but we start later in the season. I would rather do that, start later at the beginning of the season, than have all those breaks that we were having like a few seasons back, where it seemed like we're back for 2 weeks and off for three, and then we'd be back for three and then off for two, and it was just like, oh my God. And it really, you know, screws with the continuity of the story. So anything that they can do to keep the story encapsulated in a time frame that makes it better to watch is fine with me.
And one thing I just throw in there, because I've been getting quite a few questions on Twitter, season 11 hasn't been confirmed at this point. CW won't confirm anything. The earliest we ever hear is February. The official confirming date is the upfronts in May, although we haven't had confirmation that late for a number of years now. So it's likely to be the established series on the network will get they call it an early pickup. February is the earliest that will happen. So, I mean, obviously that decision's probably already made, well, probably has been already made, but it won't be made public until then. I think Amy and I are both reasonably optimistic that there's a season 11.
I think so.
You can, there won't be a confirmation, you know, until early next year. So, just I have to wait until then.
Yes, that's right. I have seen that around a lot. Everybody going, oh, season 11's already been confirmed. They've been confirmed. They've been picked up. And I'm like, no, they have not.
There's been a lot of talk by Jared and Jensen and various people, Jim Michaels, I think, positive noises about the series continuing, and that's all good. But yes, I don't believe anything until I hear the official word.
Exactly.
Which, as I said, I would imagine, and the state the CW's in, I think they'll make an early announcement about shows like, you know, Arrow and Flash, and obviously, and we should say congratulations, the first time ever that the CW has earned a Golden Globe nomination or two for Jane the Virgin, and that's wonderful.
It's wonderful.
Well deserved, I believe. I haven't watched the
Me
show.
Me neither. Haven't watched it either. I was fishing around on Twitter going, so what's it like? And I had a lot of people going, oh, it's great. And some people going, oh, it's okay. But I think the CW must just be doing backflips. It's a monumental thing for that channel to finally break through, that network to finally break through that wall into awards, which, you know, no one ever looks at them. So, you know, fantastic. They must just be thrilled.
Yes. So, good on your CW, which is, we think back probably three or four years, the CW was not looking very healthy, and now it's looking very, very good.
It's looking very healthy these days.
And a big thank you to that goes to Supernatural, who has been there and held it up a lot during some of those lean years when it was really one of the few shows that was getting consistent ratings, even when they buried us on a Friday night.
You can't break us.
You can't keep us down. You can't stop the signal of Supernatural, she said, mashing up her fandoms. Anyway, let's dive into the things we left behind. Mm-hmm. Oh, so the return of Claire Novak. I was blown away when I heard this was going to happen. You know, we've talked a lot about how Supernatural's good on returning characters. This wasn't one I'd thought about for a long time, that Claire would or could return. Were you surprised, Amy? I mean, other than knowing the spoiler, obviously.
Other than knowing when I read it in the synopsis. But no, it would even have entered my mind. And even, she was not a character that had popped into my mind at all. I never sort of wondered what happened to her or anything. Like, I just assumed her and her mum went off and, you know, went their merry way. But so I was quite blown away when I saw in the synopsis that she was going to be revisited, and then I was even more surprised with how the story unfolded. It was a lot different to what I thought it was going to be, not that I've really thought about it in the past, but you know, like it felt very different to what I assumed through the synopsis that we'd be getting.
Well, I certainly thought if Claire came back, it would be very much Angel related, Angel Grace related. Because we found out last season that if you've been possessed by an angel, then a bit of their grace may remain behind. So I thought there'd be some, you know, maybe Cass would hunt her down for that reason. But the whole episode, really, and by Andrew Dabb and directed wonderfully by Guy B, was about family and about the past and the future. But Cass taking it, following Hannah's decision to dispossess Carolyn. Yeah.
Release.
Sorry, that's better than dispossess. and return to heaven, and her statements about, you know, who are we here for, and reflecting on what she's done, drove Cass to go and look for Claire.
Yeah, I super enjoyed this visiting of the idea of what the angels are doing when they take a human vessel, you know, and I think we may have talked about it probably talked about in the episode where Hannah released Carolyn, but I kind of have always, you know, I'd never really thought too much about it, to be honest. But, you know, in hindsight, looking at it, you know, the once you, and as we learnt through the Ezekiel Gadriel fiasco, once you let an angel in, you know, how do you get them out? Mm. You know, they can bury you deep inside so that you can never scream, hey, get out of me, if they want to do that. And, you know, like, you can't get them out. And I think it's been interesting to actually look at that and now have Cass look at the impact of, because we know Jimmy's not there, and we did have this discussion, and that was actually that was confirmed through Cass's own words in this episode. So there's no doubt in anybody's mind anymore that Jimmy is in heaven, according to Castiel.
And long gone,
at the point where Cass was exploded, so that was a long time ago. But, you know, like, the fact that we're now having, you know, he can't do anything about that to his vessel, but he is seeing what Hannah's epiphany has made him sort of want to know what happened to the family that he, you know, that taking Jimmy, how it impacted them, and, you know, to actually see the devastation caused to this family by Castiel's righteous quest initially when he took Jimmy. It was really interesting, and I think it's great that the show has actually taken this opportunity to look at this and, you know, dissect it a little bit and show that this is, you know, this is super impactful on the families left behind.
Well, it's interesting this season. Excuse me. You know, we have had this sort of thread of what happens next. And so we had, of course, revisiting Kate, the werewolf, who, mm-hmm. you know, we thought we'd seen the last of a couple of seasons ago, and to see what had happened in her life. And Cole, of course, you know, I thought that was, you know, a good parallel here of, you know, something Dean did many years ago has, you know, changed this guy's life. Now, he killed Cole's father because he was a monster, and, as you know, as the boys do every week, and walked away from it. And yet to see, you know, that had then the impact that it had on this teenager who's then, you know, grown up fixated on revenge, you know, very John Winchester like. Mm-hmm. So very understandable in the Winchester world. And now we're seeing, you know, what was the impact on Claire of something that, you know, Castiel did that was, you know, certainly in the grand scheme of things was, you know, he thought was necessary. And but there's a person behind it, and there's a family, and someone whose life has been fucked up. You know, Claire is not in a good place.
Not at all.
You know, she went from being in a very comfortable, you know, middle class family with loving parents to basically being on the streets and doing anything she can to get by. And one thing I thought was really, really praised the show for was that they didn't shy away from taking responsibility, if you like, for this. There was no platitudes of it was for the greater good, you know, I did it, and, you know, if I hadn't have done that, you know, the Lucifer would have taken over. You know, the one time Cass says sorry, he gets, you know, she says, no, you're not sorry, you're just guilty. Even Sam says, you know, to Cass, you know, you can't fix this. And I think it's actually a very brave thing for the show to do, because it's owning that its main characters, and we'll get on to Sam and Dean as well, because they did the same with Dean and Cole, but you know, they've done things that have fucked up people's lives, and they're not shying away from the fact that they're not even saying, oh, you know, it was for, you know, the good of the many, or you know, I had to do it, or I didn't have a choice. It's like, yeah, we did fucking do that, and it's screwed your life up, and that's it.
Which is what I really appreciated about it. There was so much honesty in what Claire was saying straight out to Cass. You know, you destroyed my family. You're not sorry, you're guilty. And there's probably, you know, some truth to that. And, but what she was saying was very truthful. And I thought the same thing. I thought this is really, you know, an exploration of something that we haven't looked at before, at least in regard to the angels, of what they're doing. But it kind of almost harks back to what we were doing with season 9, and in this whole I did what I had to do and the consequences that follow through with doing what you have to do or what you think you have to do in the moment. And, you know, now in season 10, we're still looking at the consequences of all these people's characters' actions and, you know, in things that they've done in the past or the things that they did last season or things that they did a long time prior to that and the consequences within their lives but also the consequences in the lives that they've affected. And, you know, I think, as you say, I think it's a very brave thing for the show to sort of point to one of their much-loved, you know, lead characters and sort of say, well, maybe what well, a couple of them. Well, they're always doing it with the Winchesters, to be honest. They're always pointing their fingers at them and going, is that what they did? Was that really right? Or did they screw that one up? And they've done that before with Cass. But this there was so much honesty in this, and I thought it was really great, and I thought it was a very... I agree with you, a very brave angle to sort of take with the storytelling.
And it didn't do it. It wasn't, I was going to say demonizing, which is the wrong word to use in this context.
But it was the right word.
This wasn't a bash cast.
No, not at all.
Size. The same as, you know, I think, yes, the recent stuff with Dean and talking about, you know, that he can't come back from what he's done. There's something about it's confronting that truth and how you move forward with that. And I thought they did. And look, the young actor who played Claire, I thought was amazing because she had to carry a lot. She had to very quickly, you know, from the opening scene, give us someone who, you know, she had to believe she was, you know, tough and a survivor, but there was a great, you know, vulnerability. Even that scene at the beginning when she gets put in the solitary confinement room and there's one of those sort of anger punching things there. I mean, she's a kid. You can see she's a kid. You can see how torn she is when Cass turns up.
I thought that was beautiful. When Cass came in, there was like the look on her face when she was like, it's my dad. You know, there was the moment that she truly believed, you could see she truly hoped or wished that was going to be her father until Cass opened his mouth and said, I'm not your father, and you could just see everything change in her face. But
yeah, the fact that she goes from anger there, and then when they're trying to convince the superintendent to let her out, you know, there's almost affection there as she's fixing Cass's tie.
That's and super confusing for her.
Yeah, and I thought she did that so well. I mean, I really thought she had that right, you know, but she's still, you know, she's not trusting Cass. She's not about to go, oh yeah, I'm going on the road with you now. Like, she's someone who's had to look after herself. I mean, it's very Winchester in a way. You know, she has to rely on herself. And, you know, she's found somewhere to fit in that, you know, she knows is dodgy, but that's all she's got. And Randy, don't hang out with guys called Randy.
He's very Fagin-esque.
He was. And, you know, but I think it was interesting that we knew that her connection there had come through, you know, taking, what was his name, Daniel?
The Wiener Hut kid.
Yeah, the Wiener Hut kid. Good old Wiener Hut. We love a bit of Wiener Hut. taking him under her wing when they were in care. So, you know, it wasn't that she just found Randy on the street and, you know.
Yeah.
Picked him up. So, you know, there was a whole story sort of woven in there. And, she just made it so believable. Also, one of my favourite moments in the whole episode's when Dean calls her Miley Cyrus and she's like, eat me, Hasselhoff. And I just like, oh, my God, that would just kill Dean.
I know.
Someone calling him Hasselhoff.
But then I saw someone tweeting the fact that he once signed that piece of paper, David Hasselhoff,
back in All Hell Breaks Loose.
Yeah, and Andy had used it to find him. I thought she was great, and I really liked this storyline a lot. And like you said, it didn't make me go, oh my God, Cass did such a terrible thing, because we know the story behind it and the bigger picture, and we know that Jimmy's been gone for a very long time, and you know, like you say, it didn't, for want of a better word, demonize Cass at all.
But also to turn that word around, we know that that was one of the whole points, and, you know, going back to, you know, I think a quote from Kripke was, you know, if he was going to have angels in the show, they were going to be dicks.
Right.
And there's
and
a quote.
Cass certainly was initially.
Well, and also there was a quote that he said that they wanted, you know, they really wanted the line between angels and demons to be a lot finer. And so the fact that they possess people as well, and that has an effect, even though they require consent. And we've seen ever since season four, you know, sometimes they're prepared to do, you know, that consent can be coerced. It doesn't have to be given willingly. So that line between, you know, good and evil in Supernatural is very sort of murky. And so that I think here, very much so. And it's lovely seeing Claire reflect back on what Cass was like, you know, when she'd first met him, and Cass as well. And I think that was, you know, a big moment of nostalgia for all of us, seeing him sit there with her and thinking, yeah, you know, oh my God, you are such a different angel than you were back then.
Totally, a totally different angel. But, you know, like I have to say, like, I'm really baffled to where this goes next with Claire and Cass, because I mean, I you know, she can't just vanish out of the story now, because he's literally, and you know, figuratively taken her under his wing because, you know, she's got nothing, even more so now, because even that sort of family that she thought she had is totally gone. And, you know, what's going to happen next? And also, why, I'm, you know, like, what did he think was going to happen when he tracked her down? I mean, I know he's trying to right wrongs and, you know, wants to reach out and make sure she's okay. And,
well,
you know,
I think he doesn't think
those things through.
Think beyond, yes. I want
good at doing that, though.
I want to know that she's okay, but not what he
don't was, want to pack her she, lunch every day.
Well, he didn't think. I just don't.
No, but he doesn't do that. And I think that what I actually liked about that was, I think that's a very Cass thing as well, is that he always wants to do the right thing, and often he will do what he thinks is the right thing, but without thinking further beyond that, which I think is, you know, like. Well, they all do that, quite frankly. But I think that's also another thing with Cass, of being sort of new to this world and not having to live with those kind of decisions and consequences in the past, you know, in his thousands of years previously. He hasn't had to think like that. He hasn't had to think as such.
Oh, and, so, when, you know, and we know that when he has in the past, there was Naomi and her squad there to wipe out any memory when
exactly.
there was conscience or moments of guilt or regret or whatever. So, you know, it's certainly all, something he hasn't had the chance to experience. We do know that her mother's still out there somewhere.
Yes.
So
maybe they'll
knows?
Track her down. That
yeah.
would be
so,
super
I mean,
nice.
I think there's somewhere, you know, for her to go, if you like, if they can find her. Or, you know, she is old enough that, I don't know, they can give her a whole lot of money and she'll.
Well, that's what I thought. Surely he can manifest some money or something, or get her into college. This is in my head. He can put her grades into college. You know, he's an angel. He can do this stuff, get her into school. But, like, I'm picturing him making her little brown bag sandwiches and sending her.
I was thinking a little more like getting her a job at a gas and perhaps.
Oh, I was thinking much higher. I was being lofty.
I'm thinking perhaps her schooling hasn't had a lot of continuity, a la Dean Winchester. So,
no, I don't think,
you know,
so.
She mightn't be ready to fly into Harvard at the moment. I know some people were like, send her off to Jodie. And I'm like, oh, God, Jodie's got enough.
She doesn't need another one. My God,
she's
not starting her own girls' home.
Halfway house. She, I suppose that's something like
for girls tortured by the supernatural. Oh my gosh.
It'll be interesting. I mean, it's very open. Again, as I said before, I mean, there is still the fact that she may have some grace left in her. I don't know if that'll come into play or not.
Maybe.
Who knows? Who knows what could happen? She might just run off.
She may well just run off. But
she might make it clear that you know, she thinks she's better off on her own. She's, you know, I think she's got this far. I think she would be, you know, she would survive. I mean,
yeah, she would.
So, you know, and she might, to be honest, she might be better off far away from Cass and the Winchesters, given how the episode ended up. I think she might be thinking, dude,
I'm out of here, man. From first moment, you people are crazy. But yeah, I mean, he's not her father, and he's never going to be her father, and he can't even be a father figure to her, or anything.
I can't even imagine how
parental influence or anything, because he's not him.
Traumatic it is for her to continue to see her father not being her father.
I just, awful. That's just awful. I know, that's what I was thinking too. I was like, oh God, it must just be so hard and so confusing. And you know, that is a weird line. But it's going to be very interesting to see where and if they take her story anywhere else, if she has any relevance to anything ongoing, or as you say, if we pick up next episode and he says, oh, I dropped her off at an aunt that she had up, you know, up in New York State or something, you know, and she's living there now. Yeah. I mean, which could well be what happened. We found an aunt and she's fine and she's going to ring me and check in every once in a while. You know, I mean, that could well be what happened. But, you know, it made for very interesting thinking, overthinking.
And, of course, it was really only one of the three threads about family in the episode, because the other one that we got little glimpses of was Rowena and Crowley, and revisiting Rowena, who's obviously been hung up in the dungeon for,
and she said, for weeks. I was like, what's been going on for these weeks that we haven't seen? She said, I've been in here for weeks.
Yes,
weeks. And I'm like, wait a minute, what's been going on?
Obviously not a lot for her.
Oh, but I can't say I didn't feel sorry for Crowley. I felt horrible for him all through this episode. I just couldn't help it. It was just watching her manipulate him. And we know he just wants to be loved.
I know. And I just thought, and you know, he's on the rebound, if you like.
He's on the rebound.
Well, he had Dean for a while. He hasn't had Dean. Gerald, obviously, is no substitute.
And his history.
And it's now history, but, you know.
And, you know, and he seems depressed. Can you think about? But seriously, ever since he broke up, so to speak, with Dean, you know, he's really fed up with what's happening in hell. He seems disinterested in his lot, and every time you see him he looks miserable, and he hasn't got that spark that Crowley has always had. He seems, well, lonely, I think. And you know, and in waltz is Mummy.
Yes. And we know she's ambitious and a survivor,
and you know, you've got to wonder if she's, I mean, you know, the way it all came down made it all look like she just, you know, happened to get captured and all that kind of stuff. But she had to know that. Well, she did know. We know that she knew that Fergus, her wee boy, was now the King of Hell, because she said, finally, the King of Hell, when he walked in.
Yeah.
So, you know, what is going on there? She's specifically come to track him down for some reason. And I don't know. I'm scared.
I hadn't actually thought whether she had deliberately tracked him down or whether that was sort of all coincidental. And who knows where she's been. But yes, the whole line, and I thought the contrast with Gerald, because it's like, you know, it really doesn't matter what someone else's family is like. You really don't care. It's like, you know, he's faced with his mother, horrible mother, returning. He's got, didn't care less what Gerald went through.
No.
Which I thought was a very good observation. And then, yes, he's caught with this, you know, obviously centuries of resentment and anger building up at her. But, yes, now he has his mother back.
You
and
know.
She's suitably evil and suitably ambitious and powerful.
And powerful. See, that's the thing. She's powerful. And I think we're not seeing that. I think she's keeping everything well hidden, and she's awesome liar.
Well, and we know, though, that she has this spell that actually kills demons, which is interesting, and the only one that's ever been able to do that. So, And I think what he is lacking at the moment, besides someone to love him, dear Crowley, is a mission. You know, he's got nothing to fight. He's, really, you know, he can't even fight heaven because they're in disarray anyway.
And who'd want it, really?
I mean, I think the idea that she will obviously have a plan. She's a woman who looks like she always has a plan. Will see the possibilities of aligning with him and what she could do, and it will probably be bad for everyone. I thought that was just, as you said, watching him come under her spell, metaphorically, was just wonderful because, I love Crowley, even though I hate him.
Me too, and I felt so sad. And when he said, I've got my own family, I was like, is he talking about the Winchesters? When he's like,
well, that's what I was thinking. She assumes he means the demons, and I'm thinking, no, he's talking about Moose and Squirrel.
I think he's talking about Moose and Squirrel.
And I'd love to have the scene where he tries to explain his relationships with them, and particularly now she's met them, and she'd be like, yeah. Oh, but they tried to kill me, son, and he'd be like,
they do that.
They're my friends.
But, you know, they kind of do that stuff. Oh, no, it'll be really funny. It'll be interesting.
So I think we're certainly in the second half of the season. We have a lot more to see from them. But it was another lovely thread, and this is something we got through this episode with these different stories of family. And I think, as I've said, you know, before, Supernatural never sentimentalizes family. It's not family will cure all, you know, the love of your family will see you through. Family is hard, and sometimes family isn't the people you're related to. It's people you've chosen.
Yep.
It's difficult. Sometimes your family is the ones that hurt you the most, and that may mean you love them more or you hate them a lot. And
or you love hate them.
Or you hate love them.
Exactly.
But the way it can, you know, and I thought that was the, and we haven't even got on to talking about the Winchesters yet, but I thought the, that was the level this episode got to me, was this really sophisticated ability to weave in these different family narratives.
And which is what the show is about and has been about since day one. So, So for me to have this episode just so much about what the essence of this show is about just felt, you know, was so compelling for me.
Well, I think at this point in the season two, and I think was it because I always like to throw in a bit of Tolstoy when we're talking about Supernatural, who said happy families are all alike, but every unhappy family is unhappy in its own way. And that's really what we had here. Was that's from Anna Karenina, by the way, just want my literary cred noted. You know, we had three versions of families. Unhappy is a too simple way to characterize them, but that were complicated, that are wrapped up in grief and anger and love and a whole lot of things, and they're all very different. You know, we've got Cass trying to step into a parental role with a young girl whose father he killed. You've got Sam and Dean both, and we'll talk in a moment about the wonderful scene reminiscing about John Winchester, but also with each other and what their relationship is. And then we've got Crowley and Rowena, two evil beings, coming, you know, finding some common thread in amongst Crowley's anger, and I don't know what Rowena's feelings are, but I don't think they're love.
No, I'm quite sure they're not love. But the consequences. Look what Crowley turned into because she left him at the age of 8, and tried to sell him for a bunch of pigs.
Three. And he can juggle, he said.
And he can juggle. You know, he was not an unattractive boy.
He was not unattractive and he can juggle.
God. But I was like, look, he turned into the king of hell, for heaven's sake. The consequences of being deserted by his mom.
who was, you know, pretty much unapologetic for it.
She was.
Again, you know.
Born out of an orgy on the winter solstice.
I wasn't taking names. But I, again, it was her owning a bit similar. There was no, you know, she told him why she left, but there was no, oh, I wish I had
I'm
come
so
back.
I'm so sorry. Right, I should never have done that to you. You know,
it was like, yeah, you know, I did what I had to do, and you know, that's life. And and there was something, you know, there was a bit of a theme there of confronting these things that are as they are. So let's, speaking of having to confront things that we don't want to, the Winchesters.
Oh, yes. Oh, my goodness, yes. Well, it all went a bit pear-shaped there, didn't it?
Yes. Look, I loved, you know, we've had the last couple of episodes these hints that when Dean's had to kill, that, you know, maybe the is the mark having an effect or not, and he'd assured Sam the last episode, and I know you've said, Amy, that, you know, it doesn't really matter whether he's in denial or he's trying to convince himself or he doesn't know. He's been struggling with this.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think apart from the terrible dream or premonition or whatever it was that he had, that, you know, that we saw in the promo, and then we opened this episode with Dean with him waking up from this horrible image of himself surrounded by bodies and you know, looking at the mark on his hand. We then saw, you know, him going laughing like crazy over the Three Stooges, which, you know, like, I don't deny, I think Dean Winchester would do, but there was just something just not right in that scene. And then, you know, the way he was, like, obsessing over the grilled cheese sandwich, the burgers with Cass, you know, he even ate at the Wiener Hut. It was, you know, it was like, and I think that comes back to him driving 8 hours, you know, out of town, to out of their way to get laid. And, you know, he's trying to be Dean.
Well, oh,
and
okay.
I think there's two things here. I think the mark is, he can, you know, the mark needs to be fed. We know that, we've been told. And I think that these things he's unwittingly or unknowingly doing to feed the mark. But I also feel like there's part of Dean, he so desperately doesn't want this thing to be happening to him. He's trying to be as much him as he can be, and the things that Dean is, you know, he jokes with his brother all the time, and, you know, jibes him about stuff, you know, that's your every Saturday night, you know. He loves his food, he, you know, loves the Three Stooges, he loves sex. I mean, these are all the things that if you talked about Dean Winchester, you know, you would tick off, oh, he loves food, he really loves sex, and, you know, you would tick all those things off your list. And these are all the things that have really been quite in the foreground since he's come back, and since we've seen the hints of the mark taking hold. So I think, you know, there was that, and I think, you know, like, he doesn't know, I don't think he knows what's going on. I think he's trying to be Dean, but there's also this hunger inside him, and I think there's, you know, feeding that as well. So
yes, there's very much, he's becoming very id driven, and we see, you know, Sam's concern you know, that look when he hears Dean laughing at the video is just, it's not, oh, Dean's watching a funny video. There's, you get that sense, and
this is like just, yeah, just a little off. Everything was just a little off kilter.
Even when he greets Cass and he hoes into him for it not being an emergency. I mean, even that felt
weird.
And it felt like an overreaction to, like, if you cared that much, Dean, if you were that busy, you would have asked him on the phone.
Yeah. Yeah, he did. He was overly angry. And even when he said, even that little thing, that's Sam's every Saturday night, even that all felt kind of, I mean, it was funny, I laughed out loud, but even that was Sam's dude. Even that, just all, the whole interaction, just for everything with Dean felt off. And what was great was that you could see Sam, particularly in that Three Stooges scene, looking at him and looking at, like, do you need a moment alone with your sandwich? And looking at Dean with this kind of, something's not right, look.
Yeah, foreboding. But then,
willing to let himself go into the moment and laugh with his brother at the Three Stooges.
Because it's hardly, oh, my God, Dean's laughing.
No. You
know, let's have an emergency bunker meeting.
But I think it's also about Sam also wanting to believe that Dean's okay. And it was all so sad.
Oh, I know. And then even, you know, when he has that, his date with Cass, which was just, you know, I mean, I know we've seen that in the previews, but it was such a lovely, honest scene, you know, from both of them. And so we get to find out where, you know, where Cass's heart is at and why he's pursued Claire, but, you know, the way he looks at Dean when he says, you know, you are a role model. I mean, that's just...
God, Dean's reaction there is just... He is just so caught off guard. I loved that I thought that was beautiful. Jensen, you know, he does those little nuancey things just so perfectly. But it was just that moment where he's like, what? And just trying to laugh it off. Yeah, shoves another chip in his mouth. You know, because he's just... He's not used to... people talking to him like that.
No, but at the same time, you know, it gets to a point then where he is able to and feels the need to, you know, God, ask Cass to kill him if necessary, which is just heartbreaking. I mean, oh,
heartbreaking. Because
something. Something you have to ask of your nearest and dearest, and going, oh, well, you know, Sam will try to stop you, but you've really, really got to kill me. It's like,
and I love that he knows that Sam will try and stop him.
Yeah.
I love that. I love that he's just so confident in his brother's love, because I know we already talked about this, but, you know, like a little while back, not so much, you know. It not that long ago, he wouldn't have been able to say, Sam won't kill me. Yes. Now he can sit there and know. And, you know, and this comes back to what we've said about, you know, how he spoke about love in front of Cole and, you know, that he knows that he's got a place in Jody's heart, you know, and he knows that he's got people in his world who love him and hold him in esteem and even think he's a role model, you know.
And that must make the thought of becoming, you know, demonic again even worse, you know. It's one thing to think, well, you know, no one cares about me and I'm not worth anything anyway.
Which is where he was last season when he was going down that road.
Well, yes, I mean, he certainly was. And I think, you know, we see, you know, it's a shock for us too, though, to realise that, you know, because we see at the beginning when he's had that dream / vision, whatever, that, you know, this is a lot closer than we all realise. This is a lot more of a reality. This is not a desire for a few extra cheese sandwiches. He's quite aware that he could be closer to that and out of control. And I mean, that must be particularly for someone, well, for any of us, but for someone like Dean, it's, you know, that thought of losing control, that he doesn't know when this will happen, that it could take over in any circumstance at any time. You know, that must be terrifying.
Yeah. Absolutely terrifying and just so sad to – oh, God, it's just so sad. Oh, God. You know, and just in the end there when they left him in the house, I was just going, oh, God, don't leave him in the house on his own, because I just knew something horrible was going to be happening. And you know, and then he's like the whole flashback with the Mark of Cain, but it wasn't just the Mark of Cain, it was also Demon Dean. So it was more than just the mark rearing up inside him. It was something more than that got fired up in him when the guys kicked him in the head and took him down, you know. There was, and he warned them, but there was something else going on, more than just the Mark of Cain reigniting inside him, and as you say, it was, you know, that was just him giving over to it, losing control to it, it taking control of him, and then we had that outcome.
But to go back,
sorry,
we'll talk about the ending again in a minute, but on our theme of family, of course, we had that. First of all, Jerry Warnock, thank you for the tiki bar. I love the tiki bar.
Oh, my God.
The tiki bar.
I nearly bought you something yesterday. I was in Typo and there was some tiki bar or magnet, a tiki bar magnet. I should have got it for you. And I was like, oh, my God, I should send this to Jules. She loves a tiki bar.
Well, next time you're in Melbourne, Amy, I'll have you – to take you to the Luau Bar, which is our tiki bar here in Fitzroy, where you can get drinks in coconuts with hula ghoul swizzle sticks in them.
Oh, this sounds like a deal.
It's very awesome. But yeah, so they're in the tiki bar, and then they have this, you know, the moment when Cass, first of all, we have Sam saying, you know, I don't think there is anything, you know, you can't make this up to her. I like the fact that he said to some people, their father is everything, not all people, which was good, because not all people. But also, you know, so he doesn't sugarcoat thing or let Cass off the hook for that. And then when Cass says to Dean, you know, did you love your father? You know, such a simple question, but, you know, in the light of the Winchesters.
I know, and there's so, the looks between the brothers. And
yeah, and Dean's, you know.
It's a very complex question for them.
With everything I have is just.
Oh, God.
And Sam as well. I mean, and, you know, I know we've mentioned this before, but, you know, for me, one of the strongest narrative threads of the whole series has been the evolution of Sam and Dean's relationship with John Winchester from when we first met them through his death and for the past number of seasons since, and how that's evolved, how they've gone from, you know, Dean went from sort of, you know, unquestioning, wanting to do anything to make his father happy, and Sam from antagonist through to getting some understanding of where John Winchester, you know, came from, but still fearing how much he shaped them and rejecting that and moving through to some sort of acceptance, and now really seeing him as the complex, flawed man that he was.
Yeah.
I think has just been a wonderful through line that, you know, is something I'll always remember this series for.
I think it's been wonderful. And I think it reflects the true nature, I think, of relationships and often parental relationships, you know, in that as you grow older, your views often do change dramatically on how you were raised, if for good or for bad, because, you know, as you get life experience, that can't help but colour your own experiences.
Informs and, and you have relationships and maybe children. You know, we know Dean's had some experience of parenting and, you know, and amazingly, they've both had a chance to meet their parents when they were younger.
Yeah, of course, as you do. You know,
but metaphorically, that's about having an insight into their parents as humans, not just as parents, and getting that separation to realise that they had lives just outside of being, you know, dead mum and dad that they had to deal with. And then, you know, Dean telling the story about them going to New York was, I think, one of, you know, going to go down to one of my favourite scenes ever. Just,
me too.
You know, Sam with the, tell him about New York.
Hanging on every word and then finishing all of Dean's sentences and chipping with little details. And I got the distinct feeling that story has become like something else. You know what I mean? It's like a much bigger thing than it probably ever was, you know, as the boys have told that story and relived
it's
that story.
The legend of John Friedman Chester.
Yeah.
And the whole Sir thing was hilarious because in certain parts of fandom we refer to John Winchester as Sir, so that was sort of a little that gave me a little extra smile there. And yes, as you say, it's become part of, you know, their, you know, and as I've often said, Supernatural is a show about stories, and one of them's about the stories you tell in families. And as you rightly point out, often those stories take on, you know, a bigger part, meaning, and they become a legend or a myth in the family. And, you know, whatever actually happened is beside the point. This is a story about how freaking awesome John Winchester was. Mm-hmm. That, you know, he could bring a bar full of, you
know,
hard ass punks to heel, and they'd call him Sir
just with one look.
Yes. you know, and then Dean admitting that, you know, how did he repay John for that? By whining and telling him he hated him. And so the fact that he can reflect on that now and see both sides of that, I think is, you know, it says a lot about where they are and where they are as men now, and how they have, you know, grown in their relationship with John Winchester over the years since his death, and been able to work through that. And
and it also is another thing, as you were saying before, of the show doesn't make excuses for what the characters do. I mean, it wasn't making excuses for John And some of the bad parenting decisions or whatever.
It wasn't that, like, gee, he was really a legend.
He was a great guy. Why
didn't I see that earlier? And
exactly. It was just telling a story, because you can have good stories in amongst bad stories. You know, you can have good memories in amongst bad memories. And, you know, you can love these people even when you're angry with them. I mean, the Winchesters show that over and over again. It's... And, you know, so for me, them sitting down and telling this story that they've obviously talked about over the years, remember that time, you know, and it's become this bigger than big thing about that one time that their dad was this incredible legend at CBGB's and the fact that he is such a massive force within their lives, you know, he was and still is this huge, force in their lives. He's a bigger than big character, and that they still tell these stories. I mean, it felt really real for me that, you know, this is what people do. And it doesn't mean that, you know, he didn't do bad things, and it doesn't mean that the brothers are whitewashing away all the memories of badness, you know,
no sense of that at all.
Or that the show was erasing, you know, anything. This was just about the brothers going, you know, and it was a relevant memory to what Sam was going through. And, you know, Cass was going through.
Although it's funny, at the same, through all this, so I'm thinking, you know, and Cass is listening to this, and this is something he doesn't have. Like, he's, you know, he didn't have this relationship, familial relationships. You know, we know he had some close relationships with other angels, but, you know, I was thinking at the time, he must feel, you know, that must touch a note of sadness in him, and particularly more so with Claire, because he knows he's taken that away from her, but also for himself, that he doesn't have those memories to remedy. Oh, that time, God! God was being really, he was a burning
goofy
bush. Oh, that was,
oh my God. Yeah, I remember that time he set that bush on fire. Oh my God, we all laughed.
Those plagues. But yeah, so I mean, at the same time, we've got the Winchester story there. We've also got in the middle of it, literally in the middle of it, both Castiel's own story and the Novak story. So yeah. I just thought the scene worked on so many levels, because, you know, you couldn't get away from, as lovely as that was, it would only heighten Cass's, you know, own disconnection from that experience, and also, you know, now Claire's disconnection from that experience going forward. So I just thought it was a brilliant scene. I note that so Andrew Dabb, who wrote the episode, he wrote with Dan Laughlin the series of supernatural comics called The Beginning's End, which actually has the Winchesters in New York. Not the same story, but it has a Sam and Dean in their late teens with John Winchester in New York. So I don't know if Andrew's from New York, but good story, Andrew.
Yeah, it was a great story, and I was with you. I loved it. I just loved that story. I thought it was a wonderful story, wonderfully told, and really reflected to me the complexity of the brothers' relationship with their father, and like I keep saying, the fact that he continues to be a part of their life even though he's gone, which is, you know, like for many people is true and real of what happens with people that you lose. You know, they don't vanish, Bobby, John, whatever.
Well,
they don't vanish.
You know, they'd mentioned Bobby a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah.
When they mentioned him as their surrogate father. So, you know, there is this sense of, you know, the episode's called The Things We Left Behind, but there are also the things we carry with us. And I think that was really poignant. But then to get to the final scene when, you know, Sam realises Dean's not right behind him, we have a bit of slow-mo hair in the car.
Yeah. But Sam had a bit of a haircut by the looks of things. It looked a little bit shorter. Was it shorter this week? I don't know.
It's been a few weeks.
Oh, has it been a few weeks?
Doing some trimming in the bunker.
Yeah, but yeah, slow-mo turn just from, you know, part of me was like, oh my God, what if a big red light bursts out of the house? You know, like I really, I had this moment of fear as Sam kind of, he could hear the carnage happening in the house, and he slow-mo turned. I honestly had this moment of...
there's going to be this big flash.
The big flash of red, like with when Kane zapped everybody, and I was like, oh my God, no! And then, phew, at least we didn't go that far, because like, that would have probably blown my brain. But, yeah, just the coming in and seeing... it was so beautifully done, though. As traumatic and as tragic and horrible and heartbreaking as was, I love this scene so much that I, like, replayed it about five times in a row until I was completely traumatized by it, because it was just so good. It was the staging of the two scenes, the intercutting of them, it's a beautiful edit. You know, the powerful moment as Sam slides to his knees and holds Dean's hand in his holds Dean's face in his hands, which we've seen the reverse of. You know, this is, you know, checking in with his brother, making sure he's okay, and Dean can't even look at Sam.
Yeah,
and he's so ashamed.
Tell me you had to do this.
And
he's broken, isn't he? He just didn't
mean to.
Yeah, that he's lost control, and he knows that, you know, he lost control. And, you know, then, and pierced with, you know, Claire's screams, and it was just
Cass's face of, oh, fuck, I'm going to have to do what he asked me to do.
Yes, yeah. So all of that in that final scene. So beautiful work, you know, beautiful work from Guy B there in the directing. And but just that, you know, vision of Sam and Dean on the, you know, on the floor in the middle of all this carnage was just, you know, and I like it because it leaves us, we don't know, like, where do you go from here? How do they've been researching the Mark of Cain. They've got no, you know, it's not like, oh, we've just got to get the unicorn hair and we can do the spell.
They don't know. So what does this mean? I mean, is Dean just going to, where do we go from here exactly?
Do they, you know, just have to make sure he stays home and doesn't go near any violence or, you know, I don't know. And how's, you know, what's Dean's reaction going to be? Is it going to be, you know, yes, you need to kill me now or chain me up or...
Is he going to, I don't know. How far in has the mark gone? You know, like what happens when
he gonna run
comes
off?
Out of this haze? Exactly. Is he going to be... You know, overcome by it.
Yes. Oh. Is it a permanent or temporary or...
Oh my God. We've got 38 days to wait to find out.
Oh. Well, it's good because I can't wait to do a rewatch of the first half of season 10.
Me too. I'm very excited about doing that.
It will be excellent. I think, you know, as we opened the episode saying, it's just been a wonderful season, and I'm just so excited. And interestingly, very few spoilers going forward. We know very little about the back half of this season. Very few episode spoilers. There's the barest of spoilers for the next two episodes, like minimal, and beyond that, nothing.
Yeah, no, it's very mysterious. It's really mysterious. But that's actually something I've loved about this season too, is that I think because we haven't had, you know, this one big thing that everybody's fighting and working against or for, the season has kind of been a bit of a mystery in how it's going to unfold and, you know, like each episode sort of hinting at, you know, this Mark of Cain thing I've not really had a real sense of where we're going. Oh, by the end of, you know, which you often do. Oh, by this point, I bet you they do this. And then by this point, I bet you they do that. There's, you know, which you often do if you're battling the Leviathan or something like that, you know where it's going. I have no idea.
No. So that makes me both nervous. Very excited and very apprehensive. So.
I'm really nervous about it. But I'm excited. I was like, I so enjoyed the mid-season finale. I found it very intense. I thought it was a very intense, emotionally intense episode. Even though there wasn't a lot of action, it was very emotionally intense from all quarters. And I was on edge because I knew that shit was happening that I wasn't going to be liking pretty soon. And then it just left me. Well, I mean, I had my hands over my mouth gasping at the scene of Dean just with bodies strewn everywhere, but as I said, I thought it was fantastic, and I do as much as it breaks my heart, and I know he'll be fine. Like, oh, what if Dean's not fine? I go, he'll be fine. He'll be fine because he's Dean Winchester, and he will be fine eventually. But you know, as much as it's, I don't want any of this to happen to him again, and it's torturous to see. It's also super cool, and I really loved it.
Okay. I'm not quite in that place. I don't want.
I don't want him to go down. I don't want it to go.
Oh, you do, because no, hot.
Oh, don't it is super deny hot. It. That was really hot. I was like, why didn't they show us the scene where he killed everybody? That would have been really hot. What is wrong with me? But I wasn't alone. I have to say, I wasn't alone. I had a lot of people tweeting me back going, oh my God, yeah, that would have been so hot. But no, I don't want that to go down that way. But I just loved the way the episode ended. And I loved that scene. I got really excited about that whole thing, though I don't want it to go too much further. Thanks very much. I got really excited about it. I don't want him to go all dark side. I don't want that to happen. Jules, I couldn't cope with it again. It took me months to get over the last one. I just could not do that again.
Well, I don't know whether you will or won't. Remember, the writers are probably approaching the last few episodes of the season that they're writing at the moment.
Well, if any of them are listening, I don't want you to do that to Dean again. Thanks.
Might be too late.
Damn it! You should have got in earlier.
Yes, probably back in about September. I'm very afeared of what's going to happen.
And then the thing is, I keep thinking about that freaking Blades out there, and Crowley's goddamn well got
Crowley's
it. And
out
it's
there,
just
speaking
like
of
this
family,
bad looming thing.
We've got Crowley's son. Remember, Gavin's out there, so we could have three generations of McLeods coming together.
That would be kind of cool.
At some point, we don't know what's going to happen with Claire.
Nope.
Cass, who's okay at the moment, still has got borrowed Grace, remember? Metatron's still in the picture somewhere. Don't know any idea what's going on in heaven. Kane, of course, is out there somewhere. So a lot of players could reappear in the second half of the season. So, and I just, you know, scenes like the one we had with Dean and Cass in the diner, and the one with the mall in the tiki bar. I mean, they're just, and even the Three Stooges cheese sandwich scene. Anytime we get to spend time with the guys where they're not just working out how to kill the monster, it's just gold. And you know, I.
And this season's been full of it.
It's been full of it. I love domestic scenes in the bunker. That's a huge.
Oh my God, I do too.
Kink of mine.
Kink, Jules. We all love it.
You know, even just Dean, you know, waking up in his bedroom is just because it just gives you that sense of where they are and home and what this has become to them. So. 38 days.
38
days. We'll be back with another podcast at some point, maybe before the end of the year, peeps. I don't know what we'll talk about. Probably Supernatural.
Probably. We might talk about Supernatural.
We might do some sort of awardsy thing for the year.
I would like to do that. That would be awesome.
Okay. We'll put our brains to doing some sort of awardsy thing for the year. Best hair shot and most Dean Winchester moment and most badass Cass moment or something. We'll come up with something. Maybe you can tweet us some ideas for categories. We might put that out there.
I think that would be a great idea.
Thank you for listening. It's been an amazing Supernatural year. I know Amy and I have both had wonderful Supernatural years this year.
I have had a wonderful one.
And looking forward to another wonderful Supernatural year in 2015.
Oh, my God, yes, absolutely. Okay, so I will see you soon-ish.
Bye.
Bye.
You've been listening to the Women of Letters podcast. If you'd like to contact us, our email is wolspn@gmail.com. You can follow Amy on Twitter @AmyInSydney and Jules @SuperWiki.